Brett McKay here, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. In Finland, sisu is a concept that, while it can't be strictly translated into English, roughly corresponds to a combination of bravery, resilience, grit, and determination. My guest today will help us unpack it further and offers advice on how everyone can live a life with more sisu. Her name is Joanna Nyland, and she's the author of Sisu, The Finnish Art of Courage. Joanna explains what sisu is and how it was exemplified in the David and Goliath story of the Finns facing down the Russians during the Winter War. We then talk about what it is about Finland that birthed the quality of sisu and ways to develop even if you're not Finnish, including embracing discomfort, getting out despite the weather, and seeking silence and solitude as a way to develop inner strength. We also talk about the Finnish practice of retreating to a rustic cabin in the summer to reacquaint oneself with simplicity, manual labor, and nature. And we end our conversation with the sisu way of communication, how to foster sisu in children. After the show's over, check out our show notes at aom.is/sisu. Joanna joins you now via clearcast.io. All right, Joanna Nyland, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Brett.
So you are the author of a book called Sisu, The Finnish Art of Courage. We've written about sisu on the site before, and you say this, it's like this untranslatable Finnish word. So I'm going to ask you how to translate sisu into English. What is sisu?
Well, I would say perhaps if you would ask me for like one single definition, I would say stubborn determination. I think that that probably covers most bases, but it's also, I think for me personally, the closest one would be resilience. There's a lot of tenacity in there, but also a kind of courage. So that's why I argue that not only is sisu kind of untranslatable from Finnish, we kind of need one word to cover all those different aspects, in my opinion.
How long has this word been around? Is it a relatively new word, or has it been around in Finland for a long time?
It's been around for like a really long time. I think the earliest written record was from 500 years ago, but that's just the written record. So I would guess, you know, it feels like it's been part of us forever. It's certainly part of our vernacular and our identity. So I think probably from like time immemorial, basically. It's been impossible to trace.
All right, so sisu, it's like a grit, a determination, a courage, all those things in one. Mm-hmm. And I think really to understand sisu, you can't really say it in words. And even Finns, like they say, if you ask a Finn, like, what is sisu? They're like, I can show you what sisu is, but I can't describe it. So let's try to like describe sisu with some action. I think the story that we've written about on the site that I think really captures this idea of sisu was, it's from the history of Finland. It was during World War II, and this is the Winter War against the Russians. Mm-hmm. For those who aren't familiar with the Winter War, can you walk us through it and how you think that exemplifies sisu?
Okay, so basically what happened was that in the winter of 1939, the Soviet Union attacked Finland. And obviously, you know, Finland was and still is a very small country. Now there's about 5.5 million of us. And I think back then it was probably less than 4, and versus the Soviet Union, which was obviously, you know, a superpower. And the Russians had 3 times as many troops, and I think 30 times as many aircraft and 100 times more tanks. And basically Finland had nothing, you know, even the reserves that had to be called in, they weren't like uniforms for everyone. So people had to bring their own clothes, and they had to make these like white camouflage clothing out of like bed linen, basically. And it was all really like a do-it-yourself kind of war. But we decided to fight it anyway, because it was basically for our sovereignty. You know, that was what was at stake. And I think in the global press, I think it was maybe the New York Times or someone who called it a David versus Goliath kind of situation, because the odds were just completely hopelessly stacked against Finland from day one. But I wasn't obviously part of it, but this is something we feel very passionately about in Finland. What we did was basically to use our small size to our advantage, to try to have as much ingenuity as possible when it came to how to defend ourselves, which basically meant, you know, guerrilla tactics and trying to make all those very scant resources go as far as they possibly could. And Finns, we did have an advantage, you know, being in our own country and knowing how to ski and use snowshoes and knowing the landscape and things like that obviously worked to our advantage. But nobody, I think, least of all us, expected it to go as well as it did, because we lasted from November 39 to March 1940. We did eventually have to cede some territory to the Soviet Union, but we didn't lose our independence, our sovereignty, and we didn't lose nearly as many men as the Soviets did. And I think the figures are somewhere around 25,000 Finns versus 200,000 Russians. And this kind of changed not only, I think, our sort of the course of our future, but also the course of the war, according to some, because, you know, for those of you listening who know their World War II history, they know that Hitler, you know, he decided to attack the Soviet Union with the Operation Barbarossa. And he did that basically because he felt that they must be pretty weak if Finland can beat them, you know. So, and that was obviously the beginning of the end for him. But for us, this has been, you know, like a really a pivotal time and a pivotal moment, because I think even the decision to even decide, you know, to fight under those circumstances, to actually try, it was an act of sisu, most definitely.
I mean, so like, there's a lot of things you can take from that, like that can tell you about what it means to have sisu. So, and what are some like takeaways that you got from that experience that kind of exemplifies sisu?
Well, obviously, you know, that stubborn determination never to give up, even in the face of absolutely impossible odds. I mean, that's what I think, that's the one definition that I think most Finns would agree on. Because then if you ask, I mean, people have all kinds of definitions of sisu, and for some, it's a very personal thing, but I think that's the one. Like, you just go through, you go through, you know, hell and high water to just stick to what you've decided and to win the day, basically. So that's obviously one. And then I think another one is really to use your perceived weakness to your advantage and to think outside the box, you know, to really get creative on when you come up against different obstacles and to sort of let them challenge you instead of take away your courage. Those are just a few from off the top of my head.
And so, I mean, this moment is pivotal in Finland. But again, we've been talking about sisu. This is a concept or an idea that's ingrained in your culture, and like kids pick it up. Like, why do you think what is it about Finland that, you know, what do you think led to developing this idea of sisu?
Well, that's a really good question, because it's like I said, you know, we've had it for such a long time. But I think definitely the climate probably has a lot to do with it, because it's kind of been tough. You know, we have nice summers and all that, but on the whole, it's kind of, I think it must have been a very difficult country to settle, you know, back in the day, and to scratch a living out of the earth and all those things. So probably you would have needed a certain kind of hardiness and definitely tenacity and a tendency to want to stick things out, just to stay, basically. And I'm sure that goes for a lot of the Nordics and other cold regions of the world. But I think that, and then perhaps in more recent history, we've been like one guy that I interviewed for the book, he said that, well, you've been either colonized or invaded. You know, like that's probably gonna you know, have an effect on your attitude towards life and towards how you see yourself. And I agree. I think history plays a big role, but also the climate and probably something else, you know, like an X factor, like, you know, what is it that defines a certain people? What is it that gives them a character that lets you tell them apart from others? I mean, I don't know. It's maybe something a bit mysterious as well.
But what's interesting, so sisu is like sort of grit, determination. You would think, you know, very like stone-faced, stoic, and just, you know.
Yeah.
But Finns are some of the happiest people in the world, according to some reports.
Yeah.
Do you think sisu, do you think sisu has something to do with that?
Yeah, I do think it has a lot to do with that. But, you know, that always makes me laugh, because when I think we've been the happiest country in the world for like the third year running now. And people here just scoff, you know, when they see that, they're like, really? We're not happy. Everybody knows we're not happy. Because first of all, I think people mistake, you know, what is meant by happiness, you know, in the happiness index, which I think is more a sense of satisfaction with life, basically, and a sense of security and a sense of self-determination and all those things. I think that's what is really measured in that happiness index. And that's where we rank really high. And I think people would agree if it was phrased more like that. But it's just that the word happy kind of rings very, you know, has a very strange ring to a lot of Finns, because we're not a carnival kind of people. You know, we're quite serious and unsmiling on the whole. I mean, there are individual differences and all that. But yeah, so that's a funny thing, because I get interviewed about that sometimes. And it's always like the reaction in Finland is always like, they should come here and see what it's like if they think we're the happiest people. So there is that. But I think definitely, you know, I mean, what is it that makes people happy? Like in a deeply felt sense, I think, you know, having a society that you're proud of and a society where you feel like there is an opportunity for me to fulfill my dreams, or at least try, you know, and to be safe, and for my kids to be safe, for them to have good schooling, for just a general sense that things are running well, you know, and we can trust our government and those things. So I think Sisu has definitely built, you know, the society that we now have. That is my firm belief anyway.
Well, I think that's an interesting point. So I think when Americans think of like Sisu and grit, they're going to think of, because we're individualistic, and we're going to think, well, it's an individual trait, but you describe Sisu, there's like a collective sense. There's a group Sisu as well. I mean, you can see that with the Winter War. Like that wasn't just, there was individuals who exemplified Sisu, but they also had to exemplify Sisu as a group.
They did, yeah. And I think in general too, my grandmother, who was a young mother when the war broke out, she always said that people came together like at no time before. She'd never seen anything like it before or since. Just that sense of community, you know, that for this time we need to pull together, we need to set our differences aside, and we need to come together and just, you know, be as one. And you know, I mean, we're in difficult times right now. Right? I mean, the world. And I think this is my own personal theory that basically nations that aren't as divided are probably doing a bit better, you know, in fighting COVID, because it does require that kind of community thinking and, you know, one for all and one for all. And I feel that, you know, that's what community is always about, is that you know, you go through something difficult, but you go through it together and you try to be there for one another.
So in the book, you have a section that I had a lot of fun with, where you describe how the way Sisu is used in language, right? How parents talk to their kids about Sisu. And there's like Sisu sayings that you know, are kind of like pump up sayings. What can you walk some of these Finnish sayings about Sisu?
Yeah, well, there's a few that I mentioned in the book. There's one called Sisulla ja sydämellä, which is with Sisu and heart. And that's something that you see kind of used a lot, because it basically is, you know, that's what we want to embody. That's how we want to live. You know, we want to have Sisu and we want to have heart. And then I think I mentioned this Läpi harmaan kiven, which is literally means going through the gray stone. And the gray stone referred to is granite, gray granite, which we have a lot of in Finland, and it's really, really hard. And you know, that kind of it doesn't mention the word Sisu, but it's a very Sisu saying, in the sense that's how we feel, that we're just gonna like go through this rock, basically, if that's what it takes, you know. Yeah, and I think there was something else, but I can't remember. Unless you have it there in front of you.
Yeah, and one thing I liked is that, you know, parents tell their kids, like, you know, like the best compliment a kid can get is when a parent says, "You have Sisu." Like,
yeah.
Makes a kid's day.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes you sort of grow, you know, 10 inches at least.
Yeah.
As a kid.
We're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsors. If you're like me, you've probably signed up for subscription services, but then you forgot about them. I'm talking about newsletters, streaming services, things like that. Well, with the personal finance app Rocket Money, it can help you find and cancel your unwanted subscriptions. It can also monitor your spending and help you lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. I had a chance to use Rocket Money, connected it to my checking account, and it found a bunch of subscription services that I forgot about.
is able to cancel them, and is able to save a lot of money because the stuff adds up. Besides canceling your unwanted subscriptions, Rocket Money will even try to negotiate lower bills for you, up to 20%. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill, and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. They'll deal with customer service for you. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all the app's features. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/manliness. That's rocketmoney.com/manliness. rocketmoney.com/manliness. Get your advanced PhD in WOW from Floor and Decor. If you're a pro, you're already an expert in tile, wood, and stone. And with Floor and Decor's job site delivery, their free design services, and pro rewards that actually reward you, your business is set to grow from one client to the next. Floor and Decor isn't just a couple of aisles. It's an entire store designed to help your business boom. It's Floor and Decor. Have you ever been to an event where you just had to get the best seats? Like maybe it was a concert for your favorite band, or maybe it was an important game for your favorite team. Well, to do that, you had to set an alarm to get the tickets as soon as they went on sale. When you want the best, you have to act quickly, or someone else will get it instead. It's like if you are trying to hire for your business and you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. So what's the best way to do that? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast, and right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/manliness. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best people fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/manliness. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/manliness, M-A-N-L-I-N-E-S-S. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, picture that thing you've always wanted to learn. Now picture learning it from the person who's literally the best at it in the world. That's what you get with Masterclass. This year, learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass. Masterclass offers over 180 world-class instructors, and a lot of them are former AOM podcast guests. So for example, you can learn The Art of Negotiation from Chris Voss. We had him on the podcast. Leadership from Jocko Willink, another AOM podcast guest. Writing from Malcolm Gladwell, another AOM podcast guest. You name it, Masterclass has it. With Masterclass, you get unlimited access to intimate one-on-one classes with the world's best. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. So I did the Masterclass with Chris Voss on negotiation. Very well done. He talks about tactical empathy, how to mirror somebody so that you can develop rapport with them. So if you enjoyed that podcast I did with Chris Voss several years ago about his book, Never Split the Difference, you're going to love this Masterclass. And right now, AOM listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/AOM. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/AOM. Masterclass.com/AOM. Check out the negotiation class with Chris Voss.
And now back to the show. Well, let's talk about some ways people can cultivate Sisu in their own lives, even if they don't live in Finland.
Yeah.
And so the most obvious way I think people can like develop Sisu is like, well, I'll just do uncomfortable things. So how do Finns embrace discomfort to cultivate Sisu, and what can like other people from other countries learn from that?
Well, first of all, I just want to say that, yeah, definitely Sisu is a universal trait. You know, it's not something that we only possess. It's just that we have happened to kind of name it, you know, and make use of it. I think probably you mentioned discomfort, and I think that's a really key element in cultivating some Sisu for yourself. And I think one thing that we do it is obviously, like I already mentioned, the climate. That, you know, when you live in a place where the climate is kind of tough for big parts of the year, you kind of have to decide how you're going to let that affect you. And I'm sure this is true for, like I said, all regions in the world where the climate is a bit of a challenge, is that you learn to work around it, and you learn to not let it dictate what you can and can't do. So that's something I think, like we see now, for instance, I mean, we still have winter here. And, you know, it doesn't matter how cold it is. You'll see people cycling, you'll see people running, you'll see them obviously skiing and skating and doing all these things. But it's kind of like an everyday thing where you sort of quietly defy, you know, any circumstances that are kind of set against you. And also to experience, I think, the joy that lies on the other side of that. You know, that if you, for instance, as a child, I think I mentioned in the book that if you do something that is a bit uncomfortable and maybe you get cold or maybe you get wet or you know it's a bit tough, you just feel so much more empowered afterwards. And that's something I notice equally much, I think, as an adult, that it does me good, you know, to actually push myself a little, even if it's just like a daily discomfort or like, well, I'm sure you're going to mention the summer cottage thing perhaps later on, but that's also an aspect of that we actually want to spend some of our holidays, you know, in discomfort. That's a very Finnish thing. But I think basically, you know, don't be too soft on yourself. Maybe that's the core message. Don't always go where the sort of the threshold is the lowest, you know. Don't always be so extra kind to yourself. Like try to push yourself a little bit and see what happens.
Another takeaway I got from that is that Finns really embrace contrast or extremes. Mm. So as you said, their winters are very cold. It's very dark. And then the summer, it's wonderful. It's beautiful, but like the days are longer and like they embrace that. But the other thing you kind of embrace for contrast is you have, well, in America we say sauna, but I've learned that it's sauna.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
So you have the sauna culture as well. It's you go from extreme cold to extreme heat.
Yeah, we do.
Do you have a sauna in your house, in your place?
Yeah, I mean, I live in an apartment building, but sure. Yeah, we do. You know, you can sign up and you can sort of book a time on Saturday or Friday or Sunday or whenever, and you go with your spouse or your family for an hour or so. Yeah. It's wonderful.
No, I've got a sauna. It's one of the biggest.
Oh, great.
Yeah, wow. It was one of the best purchases I've ever made. It's fantastic. Yeah. I love it. And it's been great here in Oklahoma this winter. We've had a really tough winter. It got a lot of ice and snow. It's like -6 degrees, and it was great to get in the sauna. And then being there, it's like 190 degrees and then come out in the air where it's -6. You're like, this is amazing. It feels fantastic.
Well, you're onto something there.
I've developed some sisu. Okay. So you mentioned the cabin culture. I didn't know this about Finland. So having a summer cabin is a pretty fairly common thing, but it's not like a cabin where there's electricity and running water. It's just like, it's basically a building with four walls and a roof.
Yeah, basically, I mean, for the diehards, I think I did add in the book as well that, you know, of course, things are changing because we are more comfort loving. And I think my generation is, and probably the next one even more. But for the diehards, it has to be like proper, like it's basically back to nature. You know, that's, and like you say, it's a good point, you know, that we always seem to be like, we've had to live with these contrasts, but we also seem to search them out, I would say, because obviously we have, you know, very comfortable homes in the city or wherever we live, you know, always double glazing and well insulated houses. And we're very snug and warm in wintertime and all that. But then we want this simplicity. We want this feeling of coming back to something more primal, I would say, something that is a lot more connected to nature. And I think to some degree, we are, as a people, we are still quite connected to nature, or even feeling like a longing for it, or that we belong in nature. And we don't want to bring all of the comforts and, you know, perks of modern life into that. We actually want to, you know, lead a simple life for a few weeks every summer and come back refreshed. So yeah, that's a bit weird. I know,
but. No, that's a good point. So this isn't a cabin you go to just for the weekend. Like they'll take 2 or 3 weeks at the beginning of the summer to do that, right?
Oh yeah. And you know, some people they just want to isolate like completely. They just stay there. They don't want to see anybody. That's their idea of a good summer holiday, is that you let your beard grow and you walk around in your, you know, sweatpants from 10 years ago and you do some odd jobs around the summer cabin, because there's obviously lots of things to do always, you know, to fix and so on, but not seeing anyone and not sort of just kind of really, you know, leading a hermit existence for a few weeks. That's a lot of people, that's their highest dream. That's what they want to do.
Well, so there's
somewhere in between, you know. I'm not really that hardcore, but.
Well, there's some takeaways there from the summer cabin thing about other ways you can develop sisu. One is that solitude or silence. You talk about that in the book, the idea of silence. Mm-hmm. Like how does silence develop sisu, you think?
Oh, I think I get really excited about this. I even wrote a book about silence specifically last year, and because it intrigues me so much. But I think when it comes to silence, I think basically, I mean, to Sisu, I think basically what creates Sisu is kind of this, if you go really deep and philosophical, it's kind of this inner focus, this inner peace. And I think in order to develop it at all, you kind of have to come face to face with yourself. You have to not be afraid to be, you know, by yourself in silence, at least for like short periods of time. And, you know, I mean, there used to be a time not that long ago when that was self-evident and people would kind of do that without even thinking. But now, obviously, life looks very different and we have to really commit to having even 5 minutes of silence in a day. Sometimes it feels like. But I think it's really essential to sort of just center yourself, to focus. And, you know, people talk about mindfulness and all that stuff, and maybe you could call it mindfulness, but for me, it's just kind of, it's a form of connection, you know, and I don't feel like I even know what's going on with me, you know, unless I take that time every day, because there's so much input. There's, you know, everything from social media to news coverage all the time, and there's pods and radio, and there's music playing, and there's all these things kind of coming at us, you know, all the time. And I really feel the need personally to just sit in silence for a bit and you know, figure out what's going on with me and kind of connect with myself. And that's where I think Sisu starts, you know, that I can't really connect with this inner strength that I have, you know, unless I do that. And nature obviously is a really good vehicle for bringing out silence, because that, you know, you kind of go out there and you already, you immediately, you're kind of plunged into this sense of, you know, peace and harmony. And it kind of, yeah, it's just kind of takes care of itself, I think. Sorry for the long answer.
No, I love it. It sounds like you're passionate about this.
I am, yeah.
So some ways to cultivate silence, you know, just kind of disconnect from the internet, from the hive mind, yeah. Make moments where you're not checking your phone all the time. And then like be alone. Like a sauna is a great place to be alone if you want to.
Oh, yeah.
But then, yeah, you said nature. Yeah.
Mm. But the sauna too, I mean, and it's quite meditative, don't you find? I mean,
yes.
If you're in there by yourself and in the heat and everything, and you find your thoughts kind of slowing down and you're thinking about nothing in particular, and it's just the most wonderful feeling.
No, it's I love it. So you mentioned nature. I mean, so Finns, I imagine they love to hike, love to snowshoe. They love to be outdoors no matter what the weather is.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
No such thing as bad weather.
Yeah.
Just bad.
Yeah, absolutely.
Clothes,
yeah. Basically. And the Swedes have a saying like that too. So, you know, I think it goes for all the Nordics, because, you know, we've kind of been faced with a choice that either we kind of just sit on our couch for half of the year, or we decide that we're going to go out there no matter what, you know. I have my limits. I mean, for instance, right now, we've had like really, really icy weather for about 2 days, and I've tried not to go out because I really hate it when it's that slippery. But that's my only, like, that's my only exception. You know, otherwise I will go out no matter what the weather.
Okay. So some Nordic countries like have an idea. So like we've had Mike Viking on the podcast talk about hygge. I think that's Denmark. Do the Finns have a similar concept to that? Like there's like an opposite of Sisu, that like if you experience Sisu, you can enjoy this feeling of, I don't know, comfort or coziness. I don't know. Is there something like that?
Well, I think I don't think they're related concepts necessarily. I know Mike, actually, we did this like speaking engagement together, like a panel a few years ago. And it was really interesting to contrast these different ideas that we have in the Nordics. But I think, I mean, we have hygge as well, of course, you know, who doesn't like to cuddle up, you know, under a blanket and light some candles and drink a glass of wine. I mean, of course we enjoy that. And I think that's something that you need to, you can't neglect that either, especially in winter time. You have to, you know, because you will still be spending a lot of time indoors and you have to make yourself cozy. So I wouldn't say necessarily that Sisu is something that makes you cozy, but we just kind of, you know, we easily borrow from our neighbors, and I think they borrow from us as well.
So, okay, some things to cultivate Sisu: embrace discomfort, get outside, embrace silence, disconnect, so you can tap into that inner strength, inner reservoir strength. Then you also, in the book, you talk about how there's a Sisu way. You make the case that there's a Sisu way of communicating. So what is that? How do Finns communicate, and how has Sisu influenced that?
Well, I think we're known as being fairly blunt and unsmiling. I don't necessarily count myself in among that, but you know, as a people, but behind that bluntness, you know, is a real love of honesty and being genuine and being authentic and speaking the truth. And I have a chapter in the book about business negotiations, because this is where I've observed it close hand, you know, how Finns negotiate and what is different in our culture. And I think there is just a value of being a straight talker and of being very upfront about issues and problems, for instance, in a business, you know, because obviously naming the problem is like really necessary in order to be able to start work on it. So I think that's the Sisu thing, you know, it's an integrity thing. And also we really mean what we say, you know, in Finland. And there's this like, I don't mean to say that other peoples don't, but there is a culture, you know, where you have these phrases that don't necessarily mean very much. A classic one, I think, is, you know, the American who comes and you run into him in the street and he's like, "Oh, this is so nice to see you. Let's meet up sometime." You know, and the Finn will immediately bring out his calendar and go, "Okay, when?"
Calling us on our bluff.
Yeah, exactly. And the American will be embarrassed and the Finn will be like, "But you said you wanted to meet up. I thought you were sincere." You know, so it's those kind of funny situations that occur. So we don't really understand that kind of, we don't really do small talk, you know, and we don't necessarily have all these nice phrases and that tend to, you know, fill out things and perhaps make people more comfortable. I don't know. But the upside, I would argue, is that when we speak, you know, that we speak the truth. And if a Finn is your friend, then he's going to be your friend for life and he's going to stick by you. And, you know, so it's all that sort of putting a lot of value on being authentic and genuine and being honest, and that your handshake and that your word really should mean something. That's very Sisu, and that's very much, I think, part of how we communicate, you know, both in business and sort of at a state level, you know, with heads of state and so on. So that's something that really runs through also our personal communication.
Well, I imagine too, Sisu helps Finns have those hard conversations that other people would want to avoid. So you're like, "Nope, what's this? I got to have Sisu here. Dig deep, have some grit, and let's have this uncomfortable conversation."
Yeah. I don't think it's a coincidence that we've had some peace brokers, like some successful ones have come from Finland, you know, because if you're sitting there with two warring parties, you know, at the same table, I think you have to just call a spade and kind of be very blunt and upfront about what the issues are. And that's where the Finnishness kind of helps.
So we had a lot of people who are listening to this podcast who are parents. And I know a lot of parents, particularly in America, they're concerned about, they want their kids to be resilient. They want them to not, you know, be burdened by anxiety or things like that. So what do you think American parents, or, you know, Canadian, British, I don't know, whoever, South Africa, I don't know, whoever's listening to this, Japan, what can we learn from the Finns on how to foster Sisu in our children?
That's a good question. Yeah, I think one phrase that I used in the book was cheerful empowerment, which I feel is something that my parents did for me, is that, you know, they, when I would be whining and complaining and not wanting to do things, they would just have this fairly cheerful approach and be like, "Oh, it's not that bad. And you'll like it when you're out there. And, you know, like, if it's too cold, just keep moving." and all those things that I feel like I'm much obliged to them for having done that, because they knew that I could do it. You know, it's more of a kind of instilling in the child a sense of belief in themselves. And of course, that's, you know, sometimes easier said than done. But I think part of it is allowing kids a little bit of freedom. And I know that this is really a tricky one, because, you know, there are so many dangers lurking out there. And obviously, you know, if you live in a big city anywhere in the world, you can't just let your kids go out and play anywhere, or just say, "Oh, come back by 5, you know, or whatever. So I know it's a big challenge, but I think at least in principle, you know, to try to allow them some freedom, to try to allow them to get some scrapes and bruises, and to maybe fall off their bike or fall down from a tree if not too high, but you know, to kind of just maybe let them discover their own inner strength in a way, because it's not something that they can really figure out if they don't ever do anything, or if they're never allowed to do anything and or to try their own boundaries and see what they're actually capable of. So it's really difficult. It's a very sort of shaky line to walk. I know that, but I think that that's probably what lies at the heart of Finnish, like how we raise our children is that principle of sort of, you know, supervised freedom, but freedom.
Yeah. So I mean, like, do like parents just like say, get out of the house and kids can go explore wherever they want and just like be back by dinner time? Is that kind of how it is?
Yeah. 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 I mean, I grew up in the countryside and it was definitely like that. Like my mom would say, I have two older brothers and she was a bit more cautious with me, she said. But with them, it was just like, you know, she wouldn't know where they were. They were like gone the whole day. And she was, oh, they're with their friends somewhere. And this was, you know, way before more cell phones or anything like that. And she would just be like, well, if, you know, they're supposed to turn up by 5, if they don't turn up by 6, then maybe I'll start to ring around, you know, their friends' parents. So, you know, that sense of like, you know, not neglect in, by any means, but just a sense of ease, perhaps, that they're going to be fine. And I actually think that kids are a lot more resilient than we give them credit for a lot of the time. You know, that they're not, you know, they won't break or they won't melt if it rains on them a little bit. You know, that kind of thinking, that's very Finnish, I think, and very Sisu.
Another thing you talked about, your mom would say to you, like when you were kind of timid about something, it was like something like go boldly or do it boldly.
Yeah.
I really liked that. Yeah. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, she would say that. Yeah, rohkeasti vaan, which means to just boldly now, basically.
Boldly now, yeah.
Boldly now, yeah. Just go for it, you know. And it was me on my ice skates when I was 4. But yeah, it's a really good principle, I think. I still keep that, you know, in mind. I still have that phrase in the back of my head, you know, that just go for it. And I think, I would think that's a very American notion as well, to not let your fears decide, you know, what you're going to do.
Well, Joanna, this has been a great conversation. Where can people go to learn more about the book and the rest of your work?
Well, basically, I'm not very active on social media, I'm afraid, but I do have social media accounts. So you can find me on Instagram and Facebook. The book, you can basically buy wherever books are sold online. And in the States, it's distributed by Running Press. But yeah, I think it's not a hard book to find.
Well, fantastic. Well, yeah, it's not having social media presence. That's very, very Sisu.
Well, I do, but you know, I'm not very active and I don't know. I'm not an influencer, you know, in that sort of social media sense, but I do hope to influence people, you know, via my books and my writing and so on. But yeah.
Fantastic. Well, Joanna, thanks for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Brett, so much. It's been my pleasure. Absolutely. Thanks.
My guest today was Joanna Nyland. She's the author of the book Sisu, The Finnish Art of Courage. It's available on Amazon.com and bookstores everywhere. Make sure to check out our show notes at aom.is/Sisu, where you can find links to resources where you can delve deeper into this topic. Well, that wraps up another edition of the AOM podcast. Check out our website at artofmanliness.com where you can find our podcast archives, as well as thousands of articles rewritten over the years about pretty much anything you think of. And if you'd like to enjoy ad-free episodes of the AOM podcast, you can do so on Stitcher Premium. Head over to stitcherpremium.com, sign up, use code manliness at checkout for a free month trial. Once you're signed up, download the Stitcher app on Android or iOS, and you can start enjoying ad-free episodes of the AOM podcast. And if you haven't done so already, I'd appreciate if you take 1 minute to give us a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. It helps out a lot. And if you've done that already, thank you. Please consider sharing the show with a friend or family member who you think would get something out of it. As always, thank you for the continued support. Until next time, this is Brett McKay, reminding you not only to listen to the AOM podcast, but put what you've heard into action.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.